Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Kyler Murray has to make a decision about whether or not to go pro. And in particular, a lot of people, you just heard, by the way, how good was Mark Schlereth? Mark Schlereth just joined us an hour or two, and he's always phenomenal. Always such a good guest. One of the top radio guests we have by far. And he's always got so many interesting things to say. And his son was a first-round draft pick at in baseball. Obviously, he is a former NFL player. And a lot of people are in this Kyler Murray report, which, by the way, is coming from the San Francisco Chronicle, courtesy of sources in the Oakland A's. The Oakland A's are saying they expect Kyler Murray to declare for the NFL draft. And my argument has been, we've got a poll question up about this, that he should go, and if he can be drafted in the first round, it's a no-brainer that he should go into the first round. I've got a poll question up asking you guys, should he go into the NFL or Major League Baseball? And this is a good example, I think, of people being reflexively dumb. Usually there is wisdom in the masses, right? In general, I believe in democracy. I believe that we should have millions of people make a decision and that they're going to make the right decision. Sometimes that's not correct. Sometimes people make dumb decisions, and I think that is the decision that is being made right now by our poll voters. Nearly 19,000 of you have voted in the first hour that this poll question has been up. Would you advise Kyler Murray to go pro in Major League Baseball or the NFL? You can go vote at Clay Travis is the location on Twitter. You can find me easily at Clay Travis. 74% of you are voting that he should go pro in Major League Baseball. Now, the evidence doesn't support that he should do that. Why not? Of first-round draft picks in the Major League Baseball, only 66% of them ever make the major leagues. So 1 in 3 of first-round draft picks in Major League Baseball never make the major leagues. Only 46% of them ever make it more than 3 years in Major League Baseball. And when you actually look at the numbers, if Kyler Murray is a first-round pick, and this is a quote from Baseball America, and I put out this this article for you guys to read, if Kyler Murray gets drafted anywhere in the first round in the NFL, he will earn somewhere between 2 and 7 times as much money over the next 5 years in football than he will in baseball. If Murray is even an average NFL quarterback, he will make more than he will as anything other than an all-star outfielder. And this is pretty wild when you actually break down the scenario. Here's a further example I'm reading from Baseball America. And this is, I think, information that is counterintuitive relative to expectations. In football, Murray is consistently projected as a first-round pick. His college teammate Baker Mayfield landed $22 million as a signing bonus and over $32 million in guaranteed money by being the number one pick in last year's draft. If he plays reasonably well, Mayfield will get a big payday as a free agent after the 2022 season. Even if he signed a 5-year extension, Mayfield would hit free agency again in 2028 for a second big payday. That's the best case scenario. And then they say, well, what if Kyler Murray lasts until the very end of the draft? Then they say that Kyler Murray will stand to make $20 million or more before he gets to free agency versus $4 million that he will make playing baseball, which is really pretty fascinating. And they even break down the baseball decision. In baseball, Kyler Murray is signing for $4.6 million, okay? But that's the only payday he will get in baseball for the next 5 to 7 seasons. and he has a long road to get to the major leagues. And they say even if he gets to the major leagues, he's still 3 years away from arbitration, so his first big payday for baseball wouldn't come until 2023 or 2024, even if he's a good baseball player. His first chance at baseball free agency wouldn't come until 2026 or 2027. By that time, he would be 29 or 30 years old, which means he would only get one significant free agent contract if he ends up being a very productive baseball player. So this is a little bit counterintuitive because I think a lot of people, because of the risk of injury and CTE and everything else, think that baseball is the safer financial option. It's actually not true. For Kyler Murray, football, if he is a first-round pick at the quarterback position, is by far the safer option if maximizing income is one of his goals. Now, look, if he just loves baseball a lot more than he loves football, then more power to him. He can go chase after whatever dream he wants. But I do think that's kind of very counterintuitive and reflective of the fact that our poll voters, nearly 20,000 of them this morning, are getting that wrong. Only 26% of people are correctly analyzing this situation and saying that Kyler Murray should go pro, particularly in football this year, because the quarterback class is pretty weak, and I think he would definitely be a first-round pick. In fact, if you want a little bit of drama, Cliff Kingsbury, now the new head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, he happens to have the number one overall pick, and what do you know, back in October, Cliff Kingsbury had this to say.
Kyler is, he's a freak, man. Purdy's a really good young player, and he's going to be a tremendous player, but Kyler is a freak, and I've followed him since he was a sophomore in high school, and just think the world of him and what he can do on a football field. And I've never seen one better in high school, and he's starting to show it now at the college level. And I don't have enough good things to say about him. He's phenomenal. I've never seen him have a poor outing, not one, which a quarterback, it's impossible to do, but he's done it. And I don't know, I'd take him with the first pick of the draft if I could. I know he's signed up to play baseball, but he is a dominant football player, and I would take him with the first pick.
Wow. Cliff Kingsbury probably didn't think he'd actually have the first pick when he was answering those questions in October, but oh, how the apple turns. He now has the number one overall pick. Now, of course, he has Josh Rosen, and Josh Rosen was the first-round pick of the Arizona Cardinals last year, and that's, in fact, one of the reasons why Cliff Kingsbury is being hired, is because this idea that he can be a big helper in terms of the growth of Josh Rosen. But man, that's a hell of a soundbite to have floating around out there as Kyler Murray makes the decision about potentially going pro.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I'm confident in saying that I think Kyler Murray should put his name into the NFL draft and see where he goes, and then potentially that the NFL would offer him a better pathway to success than Major League Baseball would. And this is one of those rare times where I put up a poll question and I check it out, and I actually think, you know what? You guys are missing the boat in the early votes that are out there on the poll question on Twitter. You can search me out at Clay Travis. Would you advise Kyler Murray to go pro in Major League Baseball or the NFL? I put this up at the start of our commercial break. 1,000 of you have already voted, and 79% of you are saying he should go pro in Major League Baseball. And in theory, I understand that argument, but I just ran through the data for you, which I think proves that if Kyler Murray were a first-round pick in the NFL, it would be smarter to go to the NFL. The other thing is you could always go back to baseball. I don't think you could go to baseball and decide to come back to the NFL at the quarterback position in the same way. Now, a lot of people also probably wondering, where does this guy fit in the overall NFL pantheon of quarterbacks? And I think that's always interesting to think about where he would project. To me, he is a smaller version of Russell Wilson. I mean, almost identical to a lot of the things that Russell Wilson can do. He's got a really big arm. He's more athletic, I think, than Russell Wilson is, faster, but he's smaller. I don't really think the Lamar Jackson analogy makes sense because I think he's a more accurate passer than Lamar Jackson, and I think he's got a bigger arm. I also think that they're equal maybe in the shiftiness component, but I think the analogy, if you are an NFL team and you're thinking about drafting Kyler Murray, I think the player you would plug him in, and Russell Wilson also plays baseball, the player you would plug him in to reflect is Russell Wilson. And Russell Wilson has obviously been an incredible player for years with the Seattle Seahawks. Now, Russell Wilson was not a first-round pick primarily because of his size. There was concern that he wasn't big enough to succeed in the NFL. I think, one, it would matter where Kyler Murray measures. I think this is one of those things where it matters a great deal what height Kyler Murray actually shows up and puts forward. Is he going to be in that 5'11", 6-foot range? Remember, there's a lot of talk about Baker Mayfield and whether he was going to be over 6 feet tall or not. And that was a substantial factor. Or is going to be like 5'10 or 5'11", because frankly, there just aren't that many guys of that height. Now, Russell Wilson, again, is under 6 feet tall, but the reason why he went in the third round was because of his height. So I think this decision-making shifts in a major way based on whether or not somebody will take Kyler Murray in the first round. If you told me right now, would you rather have Lamar Jackson, who went as the last overall pick, I believe, in the first round, or Kyler Murray? I was more impressed by Kyler Murray in terms of his ability to throw a perfect ball than I was by Lamar Jackson, which is why I'm saying the analogy I would draw as to who Kyler Murray reminds me of is much more of a Russell Wilson than it is of a Lamar Jackson. Not to say Lamar Jackson can't down the road become a good quarterback. I'm just skeptical that he's ever going to be good from the pocket. I think Lamar Jackson, to me, having watched that entire Chargers game and a lot of his games this year, Lamar Jackson is a flash in the running pan, much like we have seen before with Tim Tebow, with RG3, with Vince Young. These guys come in and they're really good in their first year, and then eventually the NFL diagnoses what they can't do well and forces them to make plays from the pocket, and they can't do it. And I thought that's what the Chargers did against Lamar Jackson once we actually got into the playoffs. The very end of that Browns game, second half, they figured out what Lamar Jackson couldn't do, and then the Chargers followed that game plan. And I think next year will be really difficult for Lamar Jackson in terms of being consistent. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's going to develop in a way that Tim Tebow, Vince Young, and RG3 didn't. And maybe he's going to demonstrate that he's something more than just a runner. But I think Kyler Murray, to me, projects a lot more towards Russell Wilson than he does to Lamar Jackson. So that leads us with the question, would you take Kyler Murray in the first round? Because I think the only way he chooses to go pro in the NFL over Major League Baseball is if he's a first-round pick and he gets that kind of guaranteed money. So, 877-996-6369. Danny G, you're on the clock. You're in the first round. You need a quarterback. Are you considering drafting Kyler Murray?
This is a tough one because I think he's more likely to be a second round selection. So maybe if you had a pick at the end of the first round and you needed a really good solid backup or a guy that could learn behind your starter for the moment, then I would pick him. So
see, I think the risk, and it's a good analysis there. I think the risk is that he might not go to the NFL at all. So I think that's the challenge that NFL teams are going to have to weigh here is, if we're going to spend a first-round pick on a guy, you have to 100% know that that guy is going to come and show up and be on your team.
Yep.
You can't take a first-round pick and have him not show up. The value of a first-round pick is too high.
Yeah, and I was looking here. The last player who went both NFL and baseball was Brian Jordan, who played safety for, I think it was the Falcons, right?
And that's the last guy? I mean, it's been that long?
It has been, I believe. And obviously he played baseball for the Braves and the Cardinals.
Well, so Russell Wilson was drafted by
both. But it was more of a gimmick thing during the spring training, right, for the Yankees.
I don't think he was a very high round pick. I mean, I think that's the difference is when you feel like you potentially have first round talent in both baseball and in football. And obviously Drew, what was the court, Drew Henson?
Yes.
He was an insanely high pick in both places and ended up just kind of muddling around and never being that good in either.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that Kyler Murray could be like a Teddy Bridgewater type player in the NFL where he's a really good backup, which would also not interfere with him still playing baseball? Because he is a special talent. If anybody could play both sports, I think he could pull it off.
Yeah, I think the challenge with playing with both sports, I mean, Brian Jordan obviously did it. Deion Sanders did it back in the day, and famously Bo Jackson did it back in the day, is we've seen so much specialization in the last 20 years since those guys did it that it would be almost impossible to play both. Now, I think that Kyler Murray could get drafted in the first round, play football for 4 years, realize that he didn't have what it took, if that were the case, to play in the NFL, not get his option picked up in the fifth year, and still go back to baseball and feel like he had a chance to potentially get drafted there. I mean, look, Tim Tebow is probably, assuming he can stay healthy, probably going to play Major League Baseball this year. And he didn't go back to play baseball, and he didn't play at all in college. He hadn't played since high school, and he's going to go to the major leagues. Now, Tebow is a different caliber athlete, but he didn't go start playing baseball until, what, 28 or 29 years old? So if Kyler Murray decided to go back to baseball at 24 or 25, I still think he would have the potential, if he's that good, to end up as a baseball player, even if he didn't work out as an NFL player. Let me bring up Eddie Garcia. We're about to get an update for you. But first, Eddie, if you were advising Kyler Murray, what would you advise him to do, Major League Baseball versus NFL?
Well, I would definitely advise him to find out what exactly NFL teams think about him and declare for the NFL draft and see what the feedback is and ultimately where he's drafted. I mean, it's about options, right? Having the best options available before you make a decision. So if he has a better option in football than in baseball, then he needs to know about that.
Here's what I would say about that. It can't be to see what his options are. If you want to play football, you need to come out and say, I'm 100% committed to playing football next year. I will play if I am drafted in the first round. You know, just be as straightforward and honest as you possibly can be. Because if you're like, oh, I just want to see where I'm going to be drafted, then that's going to knock down your draft stock substantially, which would lead you to make the decision to go into Major League Baseball where you already know you've been a first-round pick. And so I think if he's deciding to go into the draft in the NFL, he has to come out directly and say, not only publicly, but also to all the teams that are contemplating him, I will go play for you in the NFL. I want to be an NFL quarterback. It's my dream. And if you draft me in the first round, I will be there. Because no GM is going to risk his job on taking Kyler Murray in the first round and then see Kyler Murray say, you know what? I've decided to play baseball instead. That's how you get fired if you're a GM, if that happens. I'll open up the phone lines again, 877-996-6369. Eddie Garcia, what you got for me?
Well, we start with NFL news, and three coaching vacancies have been filled. The New York Jets are reportedly going to hire recently fired Miami Dolphins head coach Adam Gase as their next head coach. He had a 23-25 record in three seasons at Miami, made the playoffs once, did not win a playoff game. And apparently this means that recently fired Green Bay Packers head coach Mike McCarthy will not be a head coach next season, as he had only been pursuing the Jets job, at least according to McCarthy. Denver Broncos reportedly going to hire Chicago Bears defensive coordinator Vic Fangio as their next head coach. He's never been a head coach before. He has been an assistant in the NFL for 33 years. Gary Kubiak's going to be the team's offensive coordinator coming out of the front office. And the Cleveland Browns are promoting offensive coordinator Freddie Kitchens to be their next head coach. He has no previous head coaching experience. He was promoted to offensive coordinator earlier in the year when Hugh Jackson was fired. Interim head coach and defensive coordinator Greg Williams was let go by the Browns. A couple of quick games of note in the NBA. Bucks over the Rockets 116-109. Giannis Antetokounmpo 27 points and 21 rebounds for Milwaukee. James Harden had 42 points in the loss for Houston. Celtics over the Pacers 135-108. Wizards beat the Sixers 123-106, and the Trailblazers beat the Bulls 124-106. to 112. This report brought to you by TrueCar. Online car shopping can be confusing, but not anymore. True price from TrueCar. Now you can know the exact price you'll pay for your next car. So visit TrueCar and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. We'll be back to Outkick the Coverage in 10 seconds, but first, a word from Farmers.
From a dog accidentally flooding a living room to a dog taking a joyride, we've covered it. Talk to Farmers. We know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Underwritten by Farmers Truck Fire Insurance, exchanges and affiliates. Products not available in every state.
Now back to Clay Travis in the Geico Outkick the Coverage studios.
Indeed, we are here in the Geico Outkick studios where we've got the poll question that is up and thousands of you rolling in. And again, I think that there's a lot of laziness in terms of the analysis here because 79% of people are saying I'd advise him to go play Major League Baseball. But I think Kyler Murray, when you consider his individual circumstances, may have a better chance to make big money and play at a high level in the NFL than he would in Major League Baseball. Again, first-round draft picks, and Kyler Murray went number 9 overall in the Major League Baseball draft. First-round draft picks in Major League Baseball have a 66% chance of actually making it to the major leagues. So there's at least a 1 in 3 chance that Kyler Murray would never play Major League Baseball. On top of that, historically, only half, less than half, 46% of all first-round draft picks in Major League Baseball ever play for 3 years or longer. If you are a first-round pick in the NFL, you are guaranteed 4 years of money. So arguably, a first-round draft pick in the NFL has a better career than a first-round pick does in Major League Baseball. Also, when you consider that you are playing the quarterback position, the odds of a serious injury diminish appreciably, and you have a good chance, if you sign that 4-year guaranteed deal, to also get your 5th year picked up, which could mean that you would make around $50 million in your first 5 years playing NFL football, which is more than you would make, theoretically, in your first 5 years playing Major League Baseball. Now, if you end up being one of the best players in the history of your draft class, then you could maybe make more money in the in Major League Baseball. But I think if I'm sitting around making an offer to Kyler Murray, the play is 100% to go into the NFL draft and try to be a first-round draft pick at the quarterback position, particularly because this is a relatively weak NFL draft quarterback class. You've got Dwayne Haskins, you've got Drew Locke, you got the guy from Duke, you've got Will Greer. I'm not sure that any of those guys are going to set the world on fire when it comes to people taking chances with being high draft picks with them. We've got a couple of calls I'm going to hit here, but first, Dub, what would you advise him to do?
I mean, I'm surprised by those poll results because to me it's not even – it's a no-brainer. I would go NFL because if you look at that – the numbers, the 66% make it. If you break that down even more, he's a college position player getting drafted. Less than 17% of those guys in his categories, more specifically, make the Major League Baseball.
So that's actually a really good point. I'm looking at that data right now. College position players going in the first round. I should have broken it down even more as opposed to just that scenario. Only, 20% of those players end up, 17% of those players play in the major leagues. If you are a college position player drafted into, that's wild. That's pretty wild. 17% of them end up playing in the major leagues, and only 13% of them play in the majors for 3+ years. So I don't know. I mean, I just look at this in general and say, I don't know necessarily that that's that those are odds that I would feel very good about in general. Now, I do think, to be fair, the way to look at this more accurately is played in the major leagues and played in the major leagues for 3+ years. Even then, if you're just throwing out positions and everything else, less than half of all first-round picks end up playing for 3+ years in the major leagues, whereas almost 100% of first rounders in the NFL get four years guaranteed under their contracts, and the team has a 5th year option now. So again, Jameis Winston is a good example. He's the first guy to go through and be picked up on this fifth-year option. He's going to make nearly $50 million for playing NFL football for 4 or 5 years. Now, Jameis Winston also played baseball with the Florida State Seminoles. I think the rules are different if you are in the position of being a potential franchise quarterback. I think it just changes things up in a substantial way. Let me get a couple of your calls. Let me go to Brandon in California. What's up, Brandon?
I'm just curious as to where Scott Boras plays in all this. Obviously, he's his baseball agent. If he signs a football contract, is he getting any of that money? Because as far as I understand, he has to pay back the money less the taxes if he signs an NFL contract.
Yeah, you get all the money guaranteed if you're a first-round draft pick in the NFL. You'd have to theoretically pay back your college draft pick money that you got to play Major League Baseball. But, I mean, that's what? $2.5 million maybe you'd have to pay back. And if you're a high draft pick in the NFL, you get guaranteed millions. So he's, if you're just looking at it from a pure dollars and cents perspective right now, if he were drafted in the first round, he would end up with more money. David in Houston. What's up, David?
Hey, what's up, Clay? I think you hit it right in the spot, man. You know, I think the NFL is going to be the best thing for him to do. Perfect example. I know you guys use Jameis Winston. I mean, you got Marcus Mariota in Tennessee right now, and being a Titans fan, I mean, if they pick up his fifth-year option, he's guaranteed, what, 21, 22 mil? You know, and I mean, does Tennessee really want to pay this guy that money, or do they, you know, does J-Rob want to take the chances on picking up Kyler Murray, kind of like Lamar Jackson, trade for the last pick in the first round? You know, the question is, like you said, is he going to play football? So, I mean, that's going to be the biggest question going into the draft.
Yeah, look, I appreciate the call. Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota have both had their fifth-year options picked up, so both of them are going to make in the neighborhood of $45 or $50 million in the first 5 years that they played in the NFL. And if they are able to do well in year five, then they would make $20 million-plus per year going forward over the next 5 to 7 years. So you're talking about guys who could make $150 million in the first 10 years that they play. And I think that's underrated because I don't think people have recognized how high quarterback salaries are becoming. If you can prove to yourself or prove that you're a top 20 quarterback in the NFL, you're going to make well in excess of $100 million in your career. I don't know if Kyler Murray could prove that, but if he's the next Russell Wilson, he'd be worth it.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Let me bring up Mark Schlereth. Mark, I want to start with the story that's kind of buzzing around the nation this morning, and I think it's such a fascinating one because there are a lot of different ways to go with it. And I know we've talked about Major League Baseball versus the NFL with you before. So Kyler Murray, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, the A's are preparing for him to declare for the NFL. If you were advising Kyler Murray, what would you tell him to do or to think about in terms of making a decision about whether or not to declare for the NFL draft versus Major League Baseball?
Well, I think first off, Clay, I would just tell him, hey, where do you think you're going to get drafted? What is the what is the hype or is the buzz? And, you know, there is such a dearth of quarterbacks coming out this year in the draft, the college draft, that most people and people I've talked to think that he's going to go late in the first round. Somebody's going to take a flyer on him. So now you think about the juxtaposition of baseball versus football. And everybody thinks that baseball is, oh, my gosh, you're going to make so much money. You're going to stay healthy, yada, yada, yada. So he's got $4 million that he has already signed for. If he accepts that and goes to the Oakland A's, if he gets drafted late in the first round, he's going to make $11-12 million.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after you make that $4.5 million, understand that you're not going to get paid again for another 5 years. So you're going to go to the minor leagues for 3 or 4 years. If you happen to make it to the major leagues, then once you get to the major leagues, you have to have 3 years of service, 3 point whatever or 4 point whatever years of service before you become arbitration eligible. So there's another year of arbitration, which is negotiated between you and the team. And usually, you know, they throw out a number, you throw out a number, and they either accept it or they don't accept it, and you know, somewhere in the middle. And I'm, you know, that's kind of how arbitration works. So there's another year, and you're going to make what, $1-2 million, whatever it is that you're going to make. That's kind of based on what other players in your position make on an average. So you may be 6-7 years before you actually get a contract. And, you know, nobody knows this better than I do, because my son was a first-round pick, went straight to the major leagues after 7 weeks in the minors, and, you know, and pitched in the majors for parts of 4 seasons before he tore his labrum, and he's been bouncing around the minors ever since, and he's like 3 weeks away from being arbitration eligible and hasn't really made any money since. So, like, if you're going to get $12.5 to $13 million to sign as a first-round pick, like, you've already made more money, and now you're on to your second contract. Even if you fail in professional baseball, if you're a first-round pick at the quarterback position, you're already going to make more money than you're going to make in baseball. The odds of you getting that, you know, that arbitration year and then getting a big contract after that in baseball, it's so competitive. I just think that football is going to give you the best chance to make the most money in the shortest time span. So I think the San Francisco Chronicle is right. I think that he doesn't really have a choice. If he's going to be a first rounder, he's got to go to the NFL.
That's a really sophisticated answer that I think flies in the face of a lot of people who think, oh, baseball is less taxing on your body. I want to build on that a little bit with you, but I'm reading from Baseball America right now, and I tweeted out this link, which I would encourage people to read if they're kind of debating this story. And this paragraph says, if Murray gets drafted anywhere in the first round, he will earn, this is the NFL in the first round, he will earn somewhere between 2 and 7 times as much money over the next 5 years in football as he will in baseball. If Murray is even an average NFL quarterback, he will make more than he will as anything other than an all-star outfielder, which is pretty wild to think about. Again, I think a lot of people don't contemplate this in a very intelligent fashion because they don't run through all the parameters like that. And by the way, you talked about your son being a first-round pick. Historically, only 2/3 of first-round picks ever make the major leagues, and only 46% of first-round picks in the Major League Baseball draft ever last for 3 or longer years. It's just hard. I mean, I don't think people factor in how difficult minor league lifestyle can be in terms of ever making it to the major leagues at all.
Yeah, the minor leagues, I mean, you're on buses, and it wears you down, and, you know, you're playing. I mean, you know, you get on a bus, and let's say you've got, you know, some nagging injuries. Well, you get done playing a game, it's 11 o'clock at night, you jump on a bus, you drive all night, 11 hours to the next city, you get up, you sleep for a couple hours in the hotel that they get you in, and it's a crappy little hotel, and then you get up and you're back at the baseball field at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, have a back injury, or have a hip injury, or have a groin. How do you think that's ever going to get treated and get better during the course of minor league season? And then they're like, hey, man, you really didn't play that well this year. And the next thing you know, there's a ton of kids that are getting drafted, a ton of kids that are getting into baseball. They get in right out of high school. They get in out of college. Then you've got all the Dominican players and all the, you know, and all the players from around the world that are coming in. I mean, it is an incredibly difficult journey to get to the big leagues. And let's face it, if you look at big league rosters, there are 2 or 3 guys making, you know, 90% of the money. Everybody else is, you know, is league minimum, which is about $500,000 to $550,000. That's a lot of money, and I'm not like poo-pooing that amount of money. But the odds of you getting it, and the odds of you being an all-star, like, it just is. It's just an incredibly tough journey to make it into the major leagues and to stay there, to have the sticking power. You're one injury away, and let's face it. The other thing is, and you know, my son's a pitcher. Every guy coming out of high school, every guy coming out through, you know, different countries is throwing 100 miles an hour. You know, I mean, it's like arm talent is ridiculous coming out in baseball right now. Everybody does it. So it's just a really hard journey. I just know it, you know, I mean, I've lived it. I've lived it for the last 11 years with my kid. It's a hard journey. And he's still, you know, he's still grinding away. So it just is a hard journey.
We're talking to Mark Schlereth at breaking down NFL versus Major League Baseball probably as well as anybody could do it. His son, Major League Baseball first-round draft pick, and obviously long-term NFL player. Let's go into the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. I don't know if you know this stat, Mark, but in the last 15 NFL playoff games, the underdog has covered in 14 of them. All right, if you just blindly bet the underdog in the last 15 NFL playoff games, you would have won 14 of those bets, which is wild. Do you think that momentum for underdogs will continue as we roll into the divisional round of the playoffs? And if you do, who do you like? The Colts, the Cowboys, the Chargers, or the Eagles on the road to potentially pull off upsets?
Well, you know, I think the Colts are real interesting. They're a real interesting matchup to me. I mean, I'll go back to the wild card for a second. You know what's funny about the whole wild card weekend is that you show me, you know, we get so enamored by being able to throw the ball and all the kind of spread offense and, you know, all the kind of ridiculous numbers that we put up over the course of the season. And the interesting thing to me is when push comes to shove, football hasn't changed at all. When you talk about lines of scrimmage, every team that captured and won the line of scrimmage, every team that whipped the ass of the other team up front won in wild card weekend. The Colts beat the snot out of Houston up front. They get a victory. The Chargers did it to Baltimore. Victory. I mean, the Cowboys did it. Victory. And it's the way it went. And when you look at these teams, I like the Colts in Kansas City. I think one thing, and I've been there where I'm, you know, I've been in the playoffs many times, and I've been that number one seed many times, especially as an offensive player, it is hard and as rhythmic as the Chiefs are on offense. When you take that week off, yeah, you get fresh, but you miss the timing of your offense. You miss the timing of playing together and the rhythmic nature that is playing the offensive side of the ball, especially when you base your offense on throwing the football. It is hard to get in that rhythm. And I've been a number one seed where I've lost, you know, that I've lost in that divisional round of the playoffs. So I like the Colts. I like the Chargers on the road. I like what they do from the defensive end position. And boy, they took that Baltimore offense that has been just outstanding, just crazy good. And they just hogtied them. It was unbelievable. And Gus Bradley, their defensive coordinator, switching, taking all the linebackers out and playing all DBs. He was in seven DBs at times, playing DBs as middle linebackers. They just did a phenomenal job of game planning the Baltimore Ravens. And then you just saw Lamar Jackson and the inadequacies of throwing the football, how they came to, you know, to really cost that football team. So I like them as well. The Cowboys, I think I'll go Saints because I think the Saints, offensive line-wise, I think they're outstanding. But that's going to be a great matchup because the Cowboys do a phenomenal job on both defensive and offensive lines of scrimmage. So, the Saints are playing the Eagles, but I'll take the Saints there. And the Cowboys are the ones. The Cowboys are the ones that give me a little bit of pause. Wait a minute. Do I have that right or do I have that wrong? The Eagles have the Saints, right? And the Cowboys?
Yeah.
Who are the Cowboys?
Cowboys are on the road against the Rams.
Yeah, the Rams. The Cowboys, yeah, I screwed that one up. But the Cowboys, I give them a great shot of going to Los Angeles and beating the Rams. So I tell you what, it's just, you know, the underdog thing that you talked about, I would do that. But those lines of scrimmage are what won those wild card games, and that's what I'm looking at this week, too, going into these divisional rounds.
What do you think about – I know you've got a lot of connections in Denver. What do you think about the Broncos head coaching hire, and what do you think about Kubiak coming back as an offensive coordinator?
Well, listen, I love Gary Kubiak. He's a good friend of mine, and Gary, you know, was my offensive coordinator, so I absolutely love him. And, you know, when people say, well, you know, the game has changed so much and we need to evolve, and that's such a bunch of hogwash. It's crazy to me. Like, you know, you look at Arizona and you're hiring Cliff Kingsbury. Like, wait a minute, Cliff Kingsbury went 35-40 in the Big 12 where they don't play defense. You took over Mike Leach's football team. You had a good season. You won a bowl game, and you haven't won since. And, oh, by the way, you had Patrick Mahomes. You coached him to a 5-7 season, and your last two bowl games was, I think it was the Texas Bowl and the Birmingham Bowl, and you lost both of them. And the only reason I know to go to Birmingham is to have surgery at Dr. James Andrews' place. So, like, I don't get, you know, this fascination with, oh, he's a young innovator. Guess what? Playoff football had nothing to do with innovation. It had to do with who kicked whose ass. That's what it came down to. And so, like, the innovation part, everybody, I call games every week, Clay. And so I'm putting 50 hours of film study a week into the two teams that I'm calling. You know what? Everybody runs the same crap, right? Everybody gets in a 3-by-1 formation. They run all go special, which is everybody runs go routes. One guy runs an over route, right? Everybody runs it. Everybody runs a curl flat combination. Everyone runs a slant flat combination. Everyone runs what they call line or double slants. You know, I mean, it's not rocket science. Like, and the thing is, the good coordinators, the guys who are evolving the game, the guys figure out what defense you're going to play in what situation based upon what you played in the first quarter, and they adjust the route. They adjust, you know, one guy's route based on the way the safety's playing or based on the way the corner's playing, and they get you for a big play. You know, they get you for a 22-yard explosive. That's the evolution. Other than that, man, you can look at anybody's film. Everybody runs the same stuff. So your fascination with, oh my God, you know, this guy that we hired, I heard he got some McVay on him. Yeah, they were in the shower together and he got some McVay on him. So let's hire that guy, right? Shoot, I called 3 Rams games. I fist bumped McVay. I should be a head coach. I just, like, it's mind boggling to me. The only thing I don't like about the hire in Denver is that it came, and a lot of teams do this now, so it's not just Denver, but it came with, hey, you're going to be the head coach, but here's your assistants. And I think automatically when you do that, you emasculate the head coach. From a player's perspective, you're saying, hey, here's your head coach, guys, but he's not truly empowered. He's the head coach that we appointed, but we didn't empower him because he is saddled with all the assistants that we already had because we don't want to pay new assistants. And so he's already behind the eight ball. He already has to overcome the fact that you haven't truly empowered him. And, you know, we've seen it work. We saw it work in Indianapolis with Frank Reich this year, and he did a phenomenal job. They started out 1-5, but he did an incredible job. But I think it's a hard thing to do. It's a hard thing to be saddled that way to start. And so that would be my biggest concern.
We're talking to Mark Schlereth, if only he had some opinions. When you look at the Patriots, I'm breaking them down. They lost 5 games to non-playoff teams this year. On average, in the Brady Belichick era, they lost 1.8 games a year to non-playoff teams. They've never lost to more than 3 ever in the Brady Belichick era. Have the wheels started to come off, or do you think the Chargers are not ready to take the next step and actually win a game this big?
Well, I tell you what, I think the Chargers are ready. It's going to be interesting. If you go back to last season, I think it was last season, and I'm going back into my mind watching film, but last season I think they played the Chargers, the New England played the Chargers, and they just absolutely cut him up. Now, Gus Bradley is a guy that's going to play, you know, a cover 3. That's essentially they base out of that old Seattle system, so it's a matchup cover 3. And so the weakness of that is you're flat, like the flats. So when you go back, and you can go back and look at this, I think the running backs caught 14 passes in that game for probably 150, 160 yards, and I'm just going back to the film study that I watched and that I remember. And so anytime you play cover 3, you run the corners off deep. You know, they got to run. They're deep third defenders. So your curl flat defender has got to get 12 yards of depth, you know. So he's going 12 yards deep, and then you dump it to the running back. Now he's got to come up and make a tackle on that running back. So it's a real weakness of that particular coverage, and that's what they want to sit in the whole time. And so, you know, they cut them up a year ago and won against the Chargers. So that's something they're going to have to contend with. They're going to have to play some different variations. Otherwise, Brady will just take that, and they go up and down the field with those running backs. I assume Gus Bradley will change that. But I just don't think it's the same Patriots. You know, I just don't think they have the same depth of talent defensively or offensively. And I think the Chargers, like, I think they're an incredibly talented football team on the defensive side of the ball. And, of course, you got Phillip Rivers. And I think they've got one of the underrated wide receiving corps in football. I think Keenan Allen is just a football playing Jesse. He is an unbelievably tough cover, and he kind of sets an attitude. And you don't get it very often from the receiver position where the receiver is actually setting the offensive attitude. He does that for them. Adequate up front. So I think the Chargers have a great chance of going to New England and winning a playoff game.
Outstanding stuff as always, Mark Schlereth. We will talk with you hopefully next week, break down the divisional games. Appreciate you joining us here, my man.
Anytime, buddy.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Tuesday, I was flying back from Oakland, from the Bay Area to Nashville, and my phone suddenly blew up because I had been savagely attacked by Rachel Bonetta, the host of our Lock It In television show, which is airing 4:30 Eastern, 3:30 Central, 2:30 Mountain, 1:30 Pacific. Set your DVRs or turn on your televisions during the day and check us out. This guy is on with us, but first, Todd Furman. But first, Rachel Bonetta, this aired on Tuesday. I was savagely attacked. This is what it sounded like.
We are going to do our approval rating for Clay. Bring it up here. Okay, so, okay, I've always wanted to do this. Character, we've got it at 2 because
that's high.
Clay's the worst, right? Out of 25, that's not too high.
That's great inflation.
Job performance, I think we can all agree that that sits at 0. He's pretty bad at betting. Authenticity, I give him a 22 because he's a terrible person, but he owns up to it, right? He owns it. And then the mustache rating, negative 372. I think we can all agree on that.
He's that was generous.
A dumpster fire. Sal, what do you think?
I just think, well, we could add goat status at like 37 because he, out of all of us, smells most like a goat when he was out here.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
That was an attack by primarily Rachel Bonetta upon me. And if you're not familiar with the idea there, Jason Whitlock, who was sitting in for me on the show, they do approval ratings on his show with Marcellus Wiley, Speak for Yourself, and you get ranked on a scale of 1 to 25. So I was given a 2 for character, I was given a 0 for job performance, and a minus whatever it was, 373 for my mustache. Todd Furman, I didn't hear you talking during that. I'm assuming that was because you felt like I was being viciously attacked like Nancy Kerrigan style by Tonya Harding. That's kind of the way that I would analogize this.
That had absolutely nothing to do with it. I just wasn't privy to some of the pre-show discussion. So this was carefully calculated, meticulously planned, and more importantly, executed with the utmost precision by the talented panelists and hosts with Rachel and Cousin Sal doing the dirty work for you in your absence. But that's what happens when you take off days, Clay. You go to watch Alabama get absolutely eviscerated by Clemson every which way Monday night. You elect to use Tuesday as a travel day. I apparently remain the only Iron Man that has appeared on every single episode of Lock It In since our show debuted in early September.
Yeah. Brag. So when you look, so I don't know if you know this, but Danny G, come up here for a sec. Danny G has a huge crush on Rachel Bonetta. Do you remember? Do we still have the audio of Bonetta reacting to my telling you, Danny G, that you had a crush on her?
Yeah, I think so. I think Roberto's pulling that up right now.
All right, we're going to pull up the audio if you haven't heard it. I know you were on the show since you are an Iron Man, Furman, but you don't know Danny G personally, but you can hear him talking here. What do you think his chances are with Bonetta?
You know what? Rachel's been in a long-term relationship with her boyfriend, Pete, who hasn't actually come to grace us with his presence.
I've never met
been
Pete.
In LA
we don't
for
know
three
that
years,
he's
so
real.
Danny's going to have to be a little bit of a homewrecker there, and I think Danny is a stronger man of character. unlike you who scored a 2 on the approval rating. So I don't really like Danny's chances to really consummate his relationship with Rachel.
I got a 2 on the character. Do we have me letting Bonetta know that Danny G has a crush on her?
Yeah, here it is.
All right, here's that audio.
We're starting to get on a roll. The Raiders get the big win, 24-21. I think the Raiders can extend their role, even though they're now at the very bottom, 3-10. I like betting on the Raiders going forward. My guy Danny G says they're playing well. And by the way, Bonetta, not to give you a compliment, but he's in absolute love with you. He asked about you all the time. He's watching right now. Please
well, that is uncomfortable.
So things going well. That's the early start of their relationship. There hasn't been much progress since, but there is now a Chick-fil-A. You could invite her, Danny G, to go to Chick-fil-A with you.
Yeah, and ever since you did that on the TV show, she has been following me on Twitter and liking my posts. So.
Oh, wow. That's, there's a I little. Mean,
that's how it starts.
There's
you know,
a little
that's
bit
kind of how
drama.
Relationships start, Danny. Yes. I mean, we're seeing a budding relationship with Jalen Hurts and the Miami Hurricanes as such as well. So you never know when push comes to shove how these things ultimately unfold.
Yeah, you know what? That is interesting. So we haven't talked about this yet, but Jalen Hurts is now in the transfer portal, which is just an amazing phrase, by the way, the transfer portal, as if he's going to get beamed up somewhere back in the day on Star Trek. So, but he has started following Manny Diaz and several of the University of Miami football players, meaning that maybe the Hurricanes are potentially the destination point.
Yeah, and I think when you look at Miami going through a changing in the guard with Manny Diaz taking over for Mark Richt, you want some of that experience and stability. And even if Jalen Hurts isn't known for being a vertical passer, their quarterback play was nothing short of abhorrent down the stretch with Malik Rozier and Nikosi Perry really struggling. So, you know, good things for Jalen Hurts, who stuck it out, could have easily transferred and left Alabama. You'd like to see him finish his college career somewhere where he could at least be the primary signal caller.
How, what is his value? Like, if you like Miami, I think, is the most average team in college football next year, right? They're probably a 7-5, 8-4 at best type team next year. How much is he worth on win totals, if anything, and how much would he be worth on a point total for an average team like a Miami?
Yeah, he's not moving the needle at all. I think he just gives them some of that stability, experience, and championship pedigree under center. But who knows if he's even going to actually win the job out of camp. I mean, we saw a similar scenario unfold years ago, not with a national championship caliber quarterback, but whenever Golson left Notre Dame, went down to Florida State, was given the job and never really performed to a high level. You mentioned mediocrity, and I think that Miami is kind of the poster child for that. But the entire Coastal Division may fall into that particular bucket. So going to be very interesting to see where a lot of these talented signal callers ultimately end up. We know Justin Fields headed to Ohio State. And it's still Clemson and Alabama when you look at the odds to win the national championship, Clay. I think everybody's just kind of playing for third and fourth place.
All right, so let's go into the divisional round NFL playoff games this weekend. You are a professional gambler. When you see that 15 different NFL games, the last 15, that 14 times the underdog has won, does that make you feel like the market is getting something fundamentally wrong in setting these numbers? Is it a total aberration? How do you deal with 14-1, the underdogs, against the number in the last 15?
I think it's more an anomaly than anything else when you look at the way the playoff games have unfolded over the last, you know, 15-game sample size that you mentioned. Last postseason, underdogs going 10-1 in the 11 games we saw that mattered most. Ultimately, if you believe in an efficient market, you will see some regression, but I think the public has latched onto those betting trends. You look at the 4 games that are going to be played this weekend, and the public backing every single underdog, which if we had this discussion as recently as 3 to 5 years ago, I think would have been something mind-boggling to me. And then if we go one step further and we look at underdogs of 7 points or more in the divisional playoff round, Clay, over the last 26 games, we've seen those teams go 16-8-2. So you've seen parity start to reign supreme, teams that come into this round with a little bit of momentum, and maybe ultimately some firepower that allow them to stay inside the number. But I wouldn't let that impact the way you're handicapping these football games Saturday and Sunday, one by one. Kind of treat each one like it's in a vacuum. If you happen to gravitate towards the underdog, great. If not, don't be afraid to lay the points as the situation necessitates.
If you had to pick one underdog to pull off the upset and win outright, it would be who for the divisional round of the playoffs?
For me, I actually, the more I poked around late last night, I think Dallas would be the one underdog that I would make a compelling case for, knowing that they have the pieces offensively in Ezekiel Elliott to run against a Rams defense that has struggled against ground and pound rushing attacks throughout the course of the season, and a defense right now that is the best from a points per game standpoint and a yards per game allowed of any of the eight remaining playoff teams, capable of stymieing Jared Goff on an offense that, other than the last two games against the Rams and 49ers, looked pretty pedestrian down the stretch, especially since Todd Gurley's effectiveness was limited and Cooper Kupp was lost for the season. Dallas going to have a little home field advantage, in my opinion, working for them at the Coliseum. I think the Cowboys would be the underdog most capable of pulling off the outright upset.
What about in terms of over-unders and everything else in these games? Do you lean towards the under? Do you lean towards the over? How do you play these games, especially because it seems like defenses have emerged back ascendant after all the attention that 54-51 game got? It doesn't really feel like the NFL in this postseason is any different than the NFL in the postseason has been the last 15 or 20 years.
Well, I think things could change a little bit this weekend. You have some of the most explosive offenses in the league, in the Saints, in the Chiefs, and in the Rams, in New England, all block playing football games that weren't on display last weekend. And you have the experienced quarterbacks you need to be able to put up points. We've seen how quarterbacks making their playoff debut have struggled. We'll see if Patrick Mahomes can kind of shed that particular underachiever tag that we've grown accustomed to from that particular position. But if I'm looking at totals, I think the Chargers in New England, a game that's going to be played in temperatures most likely in the high 20s, could be a little bit more defensive mind than anybody wants to give them credit for. I know you chronicled how well this Chargers defense has performed, not necessarily just in recent weeks, but all season long, and the credit that they haven't rightfully received, knowing that they have a talented pass rush in Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram, a secondary more than capable of handling its own. Philadelphia, New Orleans, for me, I think would be the most wide open football game. You dig into Philadelphia, you have some major question marks about that secondary. And the one thing that the Eagles offense will have working in their favor, Nick Foles over the last month has had one of the quickest release from snap to getting the ball out of his hands at less than 2.5 seconds than any quarterback. He's going to need that in hostile territory in a Saints pass rush more than capable of making his life difficult. That would be the game, I think, that could be the highest scoring, and I could see why people want to go over the total at 50.5, 51.
When you look at the overall odds to win the Super Bowl, do you agree that the Saints should be a prohibitive favorite right now, regardless of what might happen? I mean, obviously, we know they're 8-point favorites over the Eagles. You shared that number about how teams favored by over a touchdown have done. And if they would get the Rams or the Cowboys, they would be a substantial favorite over that team as well. Are the Saints the prohibitive favorite in the NFC?
They are, when you look at how well they've performed in home games since Drew Brees took over that franchise. 5-0 in that particular spot, averaging more than 35 points per game. And that's one of the more electric environments you're going to find in the NFL, especially this time of year. You have to go all the way back to 1992 with Bobby Hebert as the starting quarterback to find the last time the Saints lost a home playoff game. Now, of course, they didn't play a ton of them from when Bobby Hebert lost that game until Drew Brees took over. But I like what they have defensively. I love their veteran leadership. And Clay, who can argue with a head coach that brings the Lombardi Trophy into the locker room, brings in $200,000 in cash to try and motivate his team? And let me tell a lot of listeners, $200,000 in cash, it's not this major duffel bag. You could probably grab that with two handfuls, but apparently it's a motivational tactic that Sean Payton's choosing to employ. And I don't think the New Orleans Saints will be complacent knowing that they beat this team by 41 points no more than 2 months ago.
All right, let's go and say that the Colts pull off the upset and the Chargers pull off the upset. If that were to occur, then the AFC Championship game would theoretically be played in a soccer stadium in L.A. What would the line look like in a game between Chargers and the Colts in L.A.?
You'd be looking at the Chargers right around a 3 to 3.5 point favorite in that particular football game. But what's interesting in that, and I haven't done any research, the contingency plan originally put in place is that they almost wanted the Chargers to play their game in the Coliseum because the NFL said playing at the StubHub Center wouldn't be a large enough venue for a game of that magnitude. So I'm very curious to see how the NFL will elect to handle it, because as you mentioned, the seating capacity nowhere close to what you've grown accustomed to. But you'd be looking at the Chargers right around that field goal threshold.
All right, good stuff as always, Todd Furman. You'll be making picks with me on Lock It In, 4:30 Eastern, 3:30 Central, 2:30 Mountain, 1:30 Pacific. Be honest, are you surprised they haven't canceled our show yet?
Hey, I was surprised they didn't cancel our show after about 2 weeks of some of the comments coming out of your mouth and Cousin Sal. I got to be the one that keeps it on the straight and narrow. Rachel has to be the one to apologize. So every day we get to go back on the air, I feel is a blessing. I just want to make sure that you're going to be okay and the man crush that you have on James Harden is going to be able to persevere through last night's tumultuous outcome against the Bucks.
Yeah, that was tough. I'm in deep, almost a curse there. I'm in deep trouble when it comes to trying to build my way back up to defend my crown. By the way, if you were setting odds on Kyler Murray going into the NFL draft right now, prohibitive favorite that he does in fact announce?
Oh, for sure. I think it's a formality now. You look at him going through all of the policies and procedures he needs to. The fact the Oakland A's said they expect him to declare. The bigger question, if I was going to set the over-under on where Kyler Murray got drafted at 12.5, do you think he goes in the top 12 picks or do you think he goes in the latter stages of the first round?
I don't think he goes top 12, but I do think he goes in the first round. So I would go under on 12.5. Good stuff as always. Todd Furman, go follow him. Watch him on television with me on Lock It In this afternoon at 4:30 Eastern.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.